Do you have any idea what our last podcast episode was about?
No. Might be a good idea to review.
Care to venture a guess? It was sort of a like thrown. We still hadn't podcasted in a while. We threw it together as like a thing because it was sort of an event, like a cultural event occurring.
Oh, okay.
And it's kind of surprising how quickly this event has like fallen off the radar. I thought we would be getting updates like every month or two.
Cultural event?
Yeah. Has to do with space.
The James Webb Space Telescope.
Yes.
Well, I mean, have you been keeping up with it at all?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I've been seeing some
stuff.
It's been a
almost 2 years, I think.
we don't have to look at numbers. We don't have to do specifics.
You know, one thing I wonder about is with the use and the ever present nature of technology the way that it is, I wonder if people don't have an extremely distorted sense of time. I used to think it was just COVID, but now I think COVID just sort of accentuated and made it worse. But I wonder if people just literally can't relate to one another on a basic sense of how much time has passed. Maybe that's just getting older, but I do think like being so plugged into, you know, think about your life as a person. If you spend 6 hours a day consuming news and content versus somebody who spends 6 minutes a day. Like take it to the logical extreme of where people probably sit. Obviously, most people are probably somewhere in the middle of that and probably trending much more toward the 6 hour than 6 minute. But still, take two people that spend a couple years living that life and put them in a room together. Do you think the person that consumes 6 minutes of news a day, you know, that needs to complete, they both need to complete a task, let's say like build a Lego kit.
Okay.
I don't think each of them are going to have a sense of how long it took the other one to do it. There we go. Yes. Nathan just showed a Indian.
Oh, yeah.
What are those called?
It's like a tuk-tuk.
Yes.
So like a rickshaw.
Rickshaw.
Vineet got me and like himself one of these for last Christmas, not this past Christmas. And as you can see, we haven't quite gotten to it yet. We're supposed to build it together. Anyway, continue.
I love it. No, I just, as a thought experiment, put those two in a room. I think just that one experience of like having to assemble a tuk-tuk would feel very differently. But that isn't even what matters. What matters is when you look back and ask them like, oh yeah, you know, what'd you do last week? Or what'd you do this time last year? It's just going to be a very different, I think the person that consumes more is going to have a huge disconnect to how much time has passed. They're going to think a million years have gone by when it's only just been a month. Because it seems like, you know, you're kind of trying to keep your pulse on every corner of the world at all times when it's that extreme.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. Time gets really skewed when you are doing something really exhausting or like mentally challenging or physically demanding. You know, I think.
But it also gets skewed. I mean, you and I have each experienced this. I don't know that many people have if they haven't ever like sat down and written a song or recorded music. But you get in this zone where 5 hours goes by like that. You're like, what? Mm-hmm. Where did that go? It's a completely distorted sense of time. I mean, people that create anything, I think, probably have that feeling. And it's a more of a, like you said, mentally challenging thing. But it's also like a not a fascination, but and not really an obsession. It's just like this act of getting in the flow, in the zone, like totally changes things up. I don't know that any of this matters, but I think it might in a way.
Well, okay. Well,
I should say, here's I don't an know interesting, how any of this
here's
matters,
an interesting
but
thought.
I think it does.
I was on a client meeting 2 days ago with a prospective client for this year. A couple that was this is just like super cute couple that they're having like the most chill of chill ceremonies. It's going to be like 4 minutes long. It's at a brewery. All they want to do is have their friends there and party, and that's it. And And anyway, I was asking, as I always do, you know, about how they met and, you know, how they fell in love and what all that good stuff. And I asked them about, they were like, we met on OkCupid and it was like 10. It was like, I got on there and I swiped on him and I realized he had actually messaged me like 10 months ago, like right when I got off the app, that, you know, he was like interested. And I was like, oh, I would have done that. Anyway, the point is, they were like, I was like, what was your first date like? And they were like, well, we got together. We went out to a bar and then we went out to like, we walked around for a while. It's all in DC. They walked around for a while and then they found themselves at another bar and they were like,
so DC,
you know, all of a sudden they were like, well, I guess it's, you know, it's probably time for me to, she was like, it's probably time for me to go back. And she's like, I gotta get the metro or something. But I don't know if they run past 10:30. And he was like, it's 1:30 a.m.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh my God, like, how is this? And so he like gentlemanly took her home, dropped her off and then went home, even though she was like a 45-minute drive away from his house. And she was like, and that was just like so romantic. And like, even, and just that first date where we spent like 7 hours together and we had no idea that time went by that fast, was like a really good indicator of how things were going to go for us in the future. She was like, it was like, now it's almost like the opposite where it's like, it's only been 2.5 years, but I feel like we've been together forever. And,
nice.
And classic. I was like, yeah, kind of going back to this whole idea of like time dilation when you're like doing something cool, doing something meaningful or doing something, you know, intense. I think there is something to that where like time just kind of doesn't register for you in the same way.
But I wonder how that matters, because I think it does, but I still don't really have a good sense of like how or why. I think one thing you can look at as a negative is the classic, oh, they're flaky because they're artistic and like they're always like their mind is someplace else or they're always working on a project. So, you know, you'll hear from them in 2 weeks when they say, yeah, I'll get back to you tomorrow. Right. So that's kind of a negative in how somebody may not be self-aware about how their sense of time comes across and impacts somebody else's. Right. That's one example. And I'm curious, but I think it must play out in dozens of examples. And I would be very fascinated to try and like draw up a list and see, because I think it's
a list of what?
Of how a separation in one's sense of time impacts their relationship with everyone else in their life.
Let the record reflect that Nathan is getting a pen and paper out.
Okay. Well, I think having kids does this. Where it's like, man,
well, I can tell you that for
Nathan
sure.
hasn't been able to podcast for 2 years, and you're probably like,
there we go,
we just did this. No, I don't know. yeah, it's fascinating.
But okay, what do you mean, Sam? I was just here.
One thing you mentioned though in that was the brewery wedding, just having a party with their friends, and I keep seeing like over and over and over posts about the wedding photographers worried about the wedding industry because they're not booking as much and blah, blah, blah. And of course, a lot of that is COVID. We've talked about that in previous episodes already, I'm quite sure. But the reasons why people just aren't booking as much as they used to this year. But I people often say like, oh, elopements are still the thing. People can't afford big weddings, so they, you know, they buy their house, they save the money to buy a house because housing is more expensive and inflation, blah, 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 blah. But I feel like that doesn't quite answer it, because people, even if they don't necessarily want to have a religious ceremony and wedding the way that, you know, it was probably more common a decade plus ago, and even if they don't want to have a huge expensive wedding with a big venue and tons of expensive flowers and, you know, the stuff we see quite often still, but maybe not as much, even if they don't want to do that, I would say the vast majority of people still want to have some celebration of themselves, like as a couple and their relationship, and still want to throw down for a good photographer to document that. Because it's like with elopement, like the destination elopements, where in my view, that's not really a wedding. That's literally an elopement. and those are sure. fundamentally different things. We've talked about that before, but I feel like that just leaves way more headroom in the budge for a solid quality photographer.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Like that is not the reason you're not getting booked anymore. It's way more, sort of the market forces than it is people not having the money or the interest in hiring a photographer, for sure.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, people are still falling in love and wanting to stay together forever. Maybe there's like less like Christian weddings happening in America. Who cares? Maybe there's less just like religious weddings at all happening in America. Maybe the areas where most photographers are working, I don't know, i.e. big cities, are becoming more secular, more who cares about like traditional values, and they're wanting to make their love public and celebrate it, but not necessarily do things the same way that their parents did.
Yeah,
there's a big backlash about, I guess backlash is the right word, with people wanting to do things differently than their parents.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I think that there's always going to be people doing this. The question is, will they always want a photographer to be there? I think that's sort of the question that I still am a little bit wrestling with. Sometimes I'm wondering, at what point are people going to not care to have this moment professionally photographed?
And the legacy of photography is so powerful because everybody has the experience of looking at their parents' photos and or just photos of themselves growing up. And, most people at some point in the relationship have they're visiting their significant other's family and they're all sitting down around the photo album. Oh, there's that embarrassing one. Look at the butt crack. That's so cute. And, like people, there's this like built-in legacy of stuff where people just know that they should, because at some point those are going to be valued. And if I think people in their 20s or 30s don't care as much, I think there are still outside forces in terms of the family where you've got that one person saying, oh, you got to have a photographer. I mean, not everyone's like that, sure. but I think that happens enough it's going to create a sustainable industry, like even as video becomes more popular and whatnot. But like, yeah, you got to have the photographer. It will be something, it's think about how often you come across somebody who thinks they need a second shooter simply because all their friends and family say like, oh, you have to have a second shooter. It's like, no, that's really not necessary. Even if it becomes unnecessary to have a photographer for some reason, which I don't see, I still think that like legacy effect of just like, oh, you got to have this. Of course you do.
Sure.
Is going to sustain itself for decades and decades to come, like way beyond when something exists where you don't actually even need a photographer anymore. Who knows what that might look like, but
as much as, as much as I'm the eternal advocate of like, you should do whatever you want for your wedding, and not listen to external pressure as much as you can. The obvious caveat to that is like, if somebody's telling you to get a good photographer, like that person has, you should listen to that person. But I do think that it might also be a little bit up to us as photographers to continue to sort of educate, really is what it is, prospective clients on the value of having a good photographer. I get a lot of people who are looking for multiple photographers. I'm not at the top of Google right now. And so I'm usually in the running with a bunch, with a bunch of other, I'm like at 30. I'm actually fine with that right now.
I'm at like 20. Working on it. I've dropped significantly. I don't know why. Yeah. I just haven't kept up with my website as much in terms of modernizing SEO practices.
I don't know what it is either.
But here's one thing, just to not take it on another tangent, finish your thought and then we'll put a pin in Google Ranks.
Well, my thought is that I'm usually in the running with other photographers, and by the end of our conversation, which usually lasts more than 45 minutes, I really overwhelmingly get from a lot of my clients, they're like, I didn't know I needed to think about all these things. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that and it's not even sometimes even just about photography itself. It's sometimes about like, oh, I didn't know that I should think about when people should eat, you know? And I'm like, so I have to like be at the, and then the capper to the conversation is like, a good photographer knows when you should be where you need to be. We'll get good photos no matter what, but we'll also be a presence at your wedding that makes sure that you remember things the right way. In a way that that serves you and your family. So like that's a huge, huge service that we are providing by being a good photographer. You're like really helping to preserve people's memories. And that's not like a cliche, that's like an actual thing. Mm-hmm. So helping people to kind of understand that is, I think, really important.
100%. Totally agree. Two things I want to talk about. One is circle back to what you said about Google rankings. I cannot believe how popular there's a Facebook, first of all, cannot believe Facebook is still relevant. But anyway,
me neither.
There's a Facebook group called Fuel Your Photos that Dylan Howe, a good friend of mine from forever ago, Fuel Your Photos is an SEO company basically for specializing in the wedding photography niche. And the thing that I've always kind of come back to in terms of so often, especially now that people are struggling to get bookings compared to previous years, even though I think most stuff is on track toward the like 2018-19 timeframe, it just felt like we were busier than ever the past 2021 and 2022 because of crazy reschedules. But anyway, it feels like people aren't booking as much as they are. So they're trying to do things to optimize to get bookings and concentrating more on things like SEO. And I like to tell people that, you know, really, if you're not getting any book, how much have your bookings dropped? Have you lost 25% of your bookings? Have you lost 50% or more? Because each, in my opinion, the right balance to strike is more or less 25% of your bookings should come purely organic through SEO or some website interaction that they somehow found you. 25% should come from previous clients referring you, in terms of like actual people at the wedding or friends of friends.
Sure.
Another
direct relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. Another 25% from other vendor recommendations. So the venue itself or like the makeup artist or a planner. And then another 25% should be random. the untraceable, unknowable, who knows how they got here type of thing. And so that kind of becomes a mix of all the other three.
That would be ideal.
Yeah.
That way you're getting a great variety of.
And I think social media can kind of blend between the random and also the organic thing. So only like a quarter of your business should really come through SEO type, even less than that, because not everybody's using Google now. A lot of people use DuckDuckGo and a blend of it is social media, not just Google search. So that's one thing to consider. It's not going to revolutionize your business to be on the top page. It just isn't. I promise you, because I've been there for years and there was no epiphany moment of like, oh my gosh, look how many inquiries I'm getting now because I'm on page one for Google. It was never like that. And I remember starting my business at page, 100 or 90 something and, jumping
mine
up
had
through
the little infinite symbol on
jumping up to the listings and realizing I was ranking higher and higher, and I was getting busier, but it was more just that 75% of everything else in conjunction with my SEO rising, and it wasn't at all noticeable. Like, hey, we found you on Google. Yeah, just random Google search as like the main thread. And I don't know. I just think people fixate way too much on SEO as being the problem, and it's not just any one thing. I promise you, and not just one thing is worth thousands and thousands of dollars to hire someone to try and fix. Other than just maybe a fundamental website design or design issue, something
right?
Like that.
And that can definitely be valuable. I mean, you don't want to like not exist online. If you really don't know what you're doing, then, hiring somebody to like get you at least like baseline set up, be like, oh, it says that you live in Cambodia, but I think you're in America. you should probably change that. Things like that. But I agree. The other thing, though, is that, and this is something we've been talking about for many, many, many years, is that, like, and something that I'm horribly guilty of not doing very well, is blogging your weddings.
Yeah.
It has sort of the knock-on effect a little bit of increasing your Google homepage ranking, but really the value is, like, people can find your, like, if you blog a specific place,
yeah,
and people are looking there, you'll hopefully show up.
Totally.
And they'll find you that way. And I mean, I've had a lot of people that found me through one venue, but then changed venues, or kind of looking for a similar venue to that venue.
Yep.
But there weren't any good photos of the venue that they're actually getting married at. And so they found me and they were like, looks like you can handle our industrial wedding or something like that. Yeah. You know, like, sure. So that's a good way to think about it, too, is like if you blog your stuff.
Oh, my gosh. Blogging again, I'm telling myself has that too. So many kind of unintended consequences in the positive, because it. Yeah, you get the SEO, you get the whatever, but the process of having to sit down and curate a full gallery to a top 15 favorite images, or maybe a top 40 or 50 if you do a longer kind of more storytelling blog, makes you a way better photographer when you're out shooting your next wedding.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that...
So I
don't think that ever stops either, by the way, because there are many variables at each wedding that every time I'm trying to get better at this, I'm so bad still, but every time I'm going through and calling or editing a full wedding, I have just dozens and dozens of like, oh, this would be an interesting Patreon post to write about or a tutorial to make. And I never like write down what I'm thinking about in that moment. So I forget about it when I'm finally like, finally done, upload, get out of here. There are just endless things that you learn when you need to like, okay, show me your best 50 photos from the 700 you just delivered. It's like, oh God.
Right.
Yeah.
And I've sort of gone into, you can really get educated that way as well. If you're paying attention and really trying to, you know, to grow as an artist, there was actually a wedding that I was putting together, a blog post I was putting together, I don't know, a few months ago. And I was like going through the photos and I was like, dude, I don't want to blog any of these. I was like, I need to do better. In this specific scenario, there was like some, I can't even remember what it was, but it was like, I had an idea, for what this was supposed to be and I will do better next time. But this is just not bloggable enough. Next time I need to really keep this in mind, because I'm not comfortable even putting this up. I need to work on it and continue improving and get to my next thing. So I think that there's even the process of going through and being like, what did I do right, what did I do wrong, what did I do is another good question.
Didn't I do
like me? As a neurodivergent ADHD person, I can sometimes be like, I actually need to go through my photos in order to remember what the hell happened.
That's a good point,
because like in the moment I'm trying all these cool ideas and I come back with like 1,000 images during the portrait session and be like, okay, I need 10. What did I do? Oh, and then I go back and I'm like, oh yeah, this is a good idea. Let's try that again. Oh, this didn't work. Maybe there's a better way to do it.
That's part of the fun to me, but I can't tell you how many people, the big thing that I see from newer photographers that is missing, what they didn't do, is so apparent whenever you have to sit down and try and curate your images to a 50, 60 image, sort of more storytelling blog post or album design, is the segue shots, the establishing shots. So you have a sense of space in where you're at from one room, one environment to the next. So many people fixate on just like the people and maybe the close-up details and the signage and forget to back up and really give that sense of space, give the exterior shot of the building, get the, you know, wide angle interior shot of the room and the doors and the entryways and all these things, so that you have these assets to pepper in between all the you know, emotional moments or whatever else, creative portraits that you do, so that people
totally
can be back in that space with you. Like your clients, this may not, I think people can get away with it for a long time when they're new, because clients also, they have a sense of what the space was in their head. Sure. But as soon as they have the first question or realization that like, oh yeah, they weren't there. Like, what did the whole room look like? Oh yeah, it was, oh, I don't have any photos of that. Like, it can take them a minute mm-hmm. before they even realize it, because they know what it looked like in their head and you know what it looked like in your head as a photographer, but you have to take this photo so that everybody else actually knows what the environment was. That is, it's shocking to me how often those segue photos are missing.
Totally. I definitely was guilty of that for many years. It wasn't actually until I started shooting more like commercial work, non wedding work.
Interesting.
And some video before I realized sort of the concept of B-roll and the concept of establishing shots and just extraneous details, filler images.
That's
lend to the story.
Yep. And that's where
they're important.
A fixation on what social media typically emphasizes can be a negative. And I don't think it's a bad thing to, obviously, because I basically only show like the hero shots. I don't think that's a bad thing, but I think it's a bad thing when you as the creator of your own photography think that that's the primary goal or only thing that matters in like the comprehensive gallery, because it's definitely not. And it can be very easy to forget when, especially if you're starting out, all you're exposed to are like the creative couples portraits. That's, you don't even know what you don't know you're missing. And that would be those segue shots. Now, I would like to bring this full circle back to the sense of time. And one thing I like to think about is a phrase I heard another photographer say someday. I can't even remember who it was, but you take a photo twice. Have we ever talked about this? The first time you take a photo is when you click the button. The second time is when you edit. And in my mind, it's not just the physical act of editing with exposure and white balance and crop and all that. It's the edit of, am I going to include this photo or not? The cull. If you think about it on a time scale, you are literally doing photography again by the act of choosing which images you are or are not going to deliver. By the act of choosing what to deliver and what's never going to see the light of day. You have a constrained, finite set of options, much more constrained than real life. But even real life is a constrained set of like, here's what you have to work with. Now, what are you going to capture out of it? You're doing that entire process again, just on a very much more slow time scale of whatever you want when you've got your collection of images in front of you. That's how I've always thought of it, is it's literally the act of photography again, by choosing to click include or not include. I mean, in a sense, like the process. Obviously, photography is capturing light against the sensor. So it's not, that's probably the wrong word for it, but it's the same mindset.
Okay, but photography isn't just the shooting. Photography is the whole process of making images and then delivering them. I mean, you don't, because like, okay, half of the work is making the photo, but the other half is who sees it. Mm-hmm. At like, you can take 100 million photos, and if they all burn in a fire and no one ever sees them, then your work as a photographer is not complete.
Right.
Right?
I would say so, totally agree. Yep.
You've done half the work. You've taken the photos. You've probably grown in your own mind from taking 1 million photos, but those photos never got seen by anyone, not even you, right? Mm-hmm. So then they don't exist anymore outside of your own head. Mm-hmm. You can grow as an artist, but you've not completed the work.
Yeah, right, it's a two-way street. It's the capturing of something, then the somebody else viewing, yourself included, what you captured. That is the full circle. Yeah,
100%. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I think that there is absolutely, I think that's absolutely true, that you do photography twice.
This is one thing that I've always said about back in the early days when AI culling came about, was that if you're a newer photographer, become familiar with AI calling tools, like the various options that are out there. But you're so new that you're not even going to know where it's messing up versus when it's good. Like, you need that process of, first of all, taking those lessons learned of like, oh God, why did I use my, I forgot to shoot at low ISO when it's really bright out and I was shooting at, 6,000 ISO. So I have no dynamic range. Like, you take those lessons with you, even if you don't write them down, even if it takes you 50 times to come across it in calling and be like, God, why did I do that again? I cut off the feet in a weird way. Like, right. You take those lessons with you the next time you go out and you learn from it. But the more the AI calling app surfaced the best of your best work, the slower and longer it's going to take for you to learn those lessons, because you're not exposing yourself to your shit, your mistakes. And that's a problem. Now, I think there is a tipping point where you shoot enough and you call enough by hand manually that you've got a good core sense of your ability, and you can lean on tools like AI calling a lot more, but you got to be careful. And it's going to be fascinating, because I wonder, since you and I started 10 years before these tools came about, where we're going to be at in terms of, okay, an example is like generations of adults now that grew up without social media versus generations of adults that will have grown up with it. What does that impact in their daily lives? I think people, and maybe I'm wrong here, but one example I could posit is people that didn't have social media growing up have better people skills, for example. So, social interactions and just making conversation or approaching people and just whatever. They're better at face-to-face interaction than somebody who grew up with social media their entire life and maybe not. I don't know. I'm making very broad generalizations here. But for photographers that grew up with only having or using AI tools versus photographers that don't, I really wonder how that's going to impact. Again, I used like one example being like social interactions for adults and social media. I can't think. Again, we need to make like another column, another list of how is a photographer that existed before going to have an advantage? I guess you could think about film photographers and what advantage they might have.
The record reflect that I am taking out a pen.
I guess you could look at film photographers versus digital, and what advantage do they have other than the internet's general trend toward just the cool factor, because film cameras look cool. And
film photographers, the one thing that they always say to me, because I was never at any point a film photographer professionally.
Yeah, same.
I barely even dabbled in film photography. I never took any film photography classes or anything like that.
I own a lot of film cameras because they look cool.
Yeah. And I mean, the one time that I really went for it and decided I was going to shoot film for two straight weeks in Paris, camera broke 18 exposures in. So, and then that was it.
Tell that to the people who, crapped on me for using the EOS R for years because I had one memory slot.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. So all that said, the one thing they always say to me is like, you can just shoot a million photos and
yeah, you'll never know.
We have to get the shot.
Yeah.
We have to get the shot. And, and I think I agree. Yeah. I mean, you have to be very extremely skilled. When I see like really, really good photos from like before the digital era, before the 90s, mm-hmm. basically, any amazing photo. I was looking through a photo album of my mom's college yearbook from 70 something, 60 something. And 1960, late 60s. And there were these photos of, I was just going through looking, trying to find photos of my mom, but I didn't find many, but I did find, I was on the athletics page, and there were these photos of people doing shot put and swimming and basketball and all this stuff. And the photos were incredible. They were perfect photos. Like, I don't know how, they were exact moments. How did they, you have to be an amazing photographer to get this, because they only had 30 exposures at a time to get this shot. I mean, so I do think that there is physical skill that's needed for that film photographers had versus digital, where we just have infinite number of photos we could take. I do think that there is something to that, but at the same time, I don't know, man. My photos are pretty good. Your photos are pretty good.
I think it's a difference in time. Film photographers collapsed they fill in the gaps with their thought process ahead of time, which a lot of people admire and think of as like a better artistic approach. But I don't think that that's necessarily the case. If the end result is as good as it is, then what does it really matter? But they are kind of filling in the gaps of, say you had a digital camera with 300 photos versus a film camera with 30, you're going to be way more mindful and make every shot count in a way that you're just compressing the amount of time in your head by calculating and versus 300 photos where you can be a little more free flowing. And again, it's like a time thing. You could use the exact same amount of mental calories burned by the end, because you have to go through and cull through 300 photos now to get down to the best ones and still end up with the same result. So I really do think it's a matter of just mental process relative to time that is the only difference there. And that, there are pros and cons to each approach.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about, yeah.
Huh?
Sorry. I thought you froze for a second with the long.
No. I was deep in ADHD thought. Basically kind of going back to the whole, calling in, using AI. I have stopped doing that. Honestly, I've stopped doing it completely.
Stopped doing what?
I've stopped calling an AI.
Oh, okay. Okay. Interesting.
I can't do it anymore. I can't. For number one, I'm a little bit too much of a perfectionist, which I know is generally not a good thing, but don't let perfect be the enemy of the good or whatever. But my problem is I need to see the photos that I took, even if they are bad. And I think or just extraneous or whatever, like we were talking about, I as an artist am still improving all the time. I'm still thinking about how to do something better, and I need to see all of the 100 exposures that I did before I got the good one, and maybe there's one right at the beginning of all those kind of whatever images that actually does work that AI is just going to call out. I can't trust it completely.
Yeah.
Because I know that that's an algorithm that they're still working on.
Sure.
And number two, I can't take myself out of the process of going back through my photos and selecting the ones that really feel like are me. The ones that I feel like are the ones that I want to show. So the one thing that I will sometimes do is for family portraits. During family portraits time, I just don't really want to go through and see which eyes were closed. AI calling does a pretty good job.
Purely tedious. Yes, I gotcha.
That is it though. Like I've stopped even using it on like commercial shoots and stuff. I'm like, I know when I got the right shot.
I think so. I need to like kind of go through. That is exactly the balance that you should be at. I don't know that you should never use it again, but having the option of knowing that it's there when you're five weddings behind, and it may not do as good a job, but that is the reality of how the process of being a photographer plays out anyway. Mm-hmm. You have shot weddings before, and so have I, where I wasn't in tip-top shape because it was my third wedding that weekend, right? Yeah. Like physically or mentally, for whatever reason, just wasn't firing on all cylinders. That's the exact same trade-off you can and probably do make, even when you manually call, by choosing to use AI. It's going to miss some stuff, and some shots that were better that exist in the world now as a file are never going to see the light of day because you missed it or the AI missed it.
Sure.
And having the tool there to leverage when you absolutely need it, because having something delivered will make a client happier than having the absolute perfect to the pixel gallery delivered 3 years later, right? Like they need to see something. But choosing to and having a reason why to take a break from or stop entirely from using AI stuff, I think is key. And it's important to at least at some point embrace the actual process so that you can feel out where the limitations of the technology in its current state are. Because in general, technology will likely always improve. And, you know, yeah. I say that though, but the more I keep thinking about the world, the more I'm like, is this really improving anything? A recent Adobe update, or maybe it's a MacBook M3 thing. I just was Googling as you were talking, because I also cannot concentrate on one thing. I have the Pro XDR display. Works great. Love it. Bought it used. Has been working rock Amazing. Solid ever since I've had it, right? Nice. Recent update. The XDR dims and blinks on and off randomly within Lightroom. So like the extra brightness juice that it can do just randomly will brighten, and it's impossible to edit on.
Wait,
yeah,
is that a Lightroom
thing? I think it's a combination.
Or it's...
I think it's a combination. Yeah, because I think it's something to do with the M3, and it's an Adobe maybe not being updated or something. I have no idea. Hmm. It works fine in my liquid display. Like the built-in screen on the computer.
Yeah, the actual.
So it's something to do with the XDR. Screen. Now here's the workaround. Doesn't happen at all if I keep my brightness 2 clicks below full brightness. No issue. Stays consistent. Mm. There's no like blinking up. It's a bug. And it's the more shit like that stacks up in life, I swear, it's endless. I must have hundreds of like weird interactions like that with Siri and my HomePods and all the stuff that's like not getting better. It's getting worse.
I'll give you another one. Siri can now be activated by just saying Siri. Oh, it just did.
Oh, great. Cool. How many people just found that out by you? Yeah, I'm going to have to bleep those.
Yeah. So guess what happens every time I say the word, hey, Sadie?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Every time. If I'm on a FaceTime call and I'm with somebody and I'm talking with Sadie next to me, that's my daughter, by the way. When, like, let's say this happened this morning. I was on a FaceTime call with somebody who wanted to talk with Sadie before she went to school. And I was like, Sadie has on her new jacket today. And Siri came up and, like, took over the screen. And I was like, what the hell is happening? It's like, yeah. Get away. Technology is, like, a blessing and definitely a curse. And I think people have basically been saying that ever since a wheel was invented. I don't think that we're, like... you know, old fogies or anything, but I just think there's a ways to go on yeah. finding the balance between making our lives easier and like making and like putting stumbling blocks in front of us. And as artists, like we have to have a process like that works consistently, because we're, especially for you and for me, when we're working with volume of photos. This last year, I shot 20 weddings, and I'm like, I need to come back home and have everything be like exactly how I need it to be.
100%
to be this
is why
same as last time.
I was always confused and thought it was silly, but like recording studios, like a few that I interned at and stuff growing up in college, they would say, we have one computer. It's not connected to the internet. Like it is for authentication of plugins when it's needed. And then we never, ever change that computer. Yeah. Is stuck in time. We do not update our OS. We do nothing because the last thing, the absolute enemy of the creative process is troubleshooting problems as they pop up.
And this is a problem that we have run into almost every time that me and you have recorded, not podcasting, music, and podcasting, but mainly music, where as the minute we're like, we like schedule a date, like we are going to record on this day. We're going to get going on the record. We're going to do some demos, whatever. We're just going to hang out and record. We inevitably have some new piece of technology to try out or some new mic or something. And it takes 6 hours of like troubleshooting and like making sure that the plugins all work correctly. And like that the last update that we did, like, you know,
It's awful.
You know, completely messed with our flow and we lose a day of recording.
This is
kind of fun by the end of it.
You learn some new stuff. Yeah, it can be an inspiration if the problem is solved in a way that you get a happy accident in terms of something sonically occurring or whatever. But that's pretty rare. That's way more rare than just playing music in a room together and having something weird happen. And you're like, oh my God, that was awesome. Do that again. Like that happens way more often when you're actually playing versus like doing the technology side of trying to record. Yeah.
Right. And I remember, cause I've been listening to a lot of Prince lately. I remember cause I went to Prince's like estate, in,
when did you do it? When was
Paisley,
that?
Paisley Park in Minnesota. That was like, I don't know. It was 2019, I think.
Okay.
But it was like, it was first, I mean, that a whole podcast could be just about that experience. It was absolutely bizarre. But the one key takeaway that I, or one of the big takeaways I had from it, there was like multiple like mind blowing revelations from that. Was that like he had, first of all, he had three studios in his house. There was like a big Studio A, slightly smaller Studio B, and then there was a Studio C, which was a basketball court, full wall of mirror. So you could do so choreographed dances and choreographed like concert rehearsals, basically, in Studio C. The point was, is that Studio A was walk in, and this is had how it had to be with Prince. It's like you walk in, you plug in and you record, like you don't change, like the whole studio is ready to go at all times, 2 a.m., 10 a.m., 3 p.m. You could walk in and record because it was everything was just set.
Yeah.
Everything was ready to go. If you had an idea, you could walk in and lay it down.
You know, I think we've talked about this before, but I think that's a big reason the older way of doing things by having a dedicated engineer versus a dedicated producer versus a dedicated guitar tech. Like, you know, when you're at the real pro level, you as the artist are able to just stay completely siloed in like your mindset of creation relative to this song or whatever you're writing, the part you're writing.
Yes.
And so much of what we do now is capable by you solo doing everything that, stuff's going to suffer. You're going to get that distraction and you've got to find that balance, which is harder than ever to really lock onto. And unfortunately, it's more expensive to have somebody else do those things for you, but it kind of can serve itself because the more you concentrate on like the fundamentals of songwriting or in our case, photography or whatever, the better your, in theory, art becomes. Mm-hmm. And the more complex the environment around your artistic thing, the apparatus, like the business or your social media account or the band or whatever it is, the more complex that grows, in theory, hopefully, your work is good enough that you can start to pay and afford to offset some of that instead of getting completely buried and crippled under it. I don't know. That's just a random thought, but that's amazing. Like having something just completely set at all times to be able to walk in and record is a, I can't tell you how many times I'm like, oh, I have this great idea, or I'm really just feeling motivated to sit down and like write a song. And I'm like, damn it, where's that cable I need? And then 2 minutes later, mm-hmm. I'm like, yeah, I'll just watch Battlestar Galactica. That's fine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that right there. I mean, that's gotten me too. I've talked to you for a little while about how my studio is a little bit messy right now. And I really want to get to the point where I can walk in and record music when I have the ideas, because it's been like a few years since I've been able to actually work on and release a song. So like I want to have that luxury, but I can't do that right now until I get my fundamental studio kind of reset and reorganized so that I have a creative flow and I can just walk in and do it. It's tough, but I think for kind of getting, let's see if we can kind of bring this back to photography, because I guess with changes in technology, it's just really important that if you are going to experiment with AI or with, culling or editing, whatever it is, mm-hmm. that you take a good amount of time to make that fit in with your creative process and not the other way around. Not trying to, be so enamored with, oh my God, I can just have my shit edited, culled for me, that I completely miss the opportunity to like learn from my own culling. and also just kind of offload. I mean, I think that there is, again, there's ways to offload your mental load onto technology. But I think you really, as a photographer, I really strongly believe, especially a wedding photographer, you really have to firmly be in the mindset of an artist trying to improve your work and trying to create the best art that you can and start from there. And then, you know, your business can grow from that. But it's really important, I think, to like have that. If you're, like I said, if you're going to have technology in your process, take the time to establish a good foundation for that so that you can walk in and be part of your process.
When did you do that trip to Prince's
Paisley Park?
Yeah,
Paisley Park is what it's called. It's a so my cousin's uncle, sorry, Abby's uncle is a teacher, and over the summer he decided he was going to take like a road trip basically across America. And he was doing sort of a stint through like Chicago and Minnesota and Wisconsin and that whole area. He invited us to come along for a few weeks of that. So we went up there, and part of that trip we were like, we got to go see Prince's Mansion while we're here. Literally a whole podcast episode could be about that. But it was pretty mind bending the way that he set his life up for pure music was inspiring. He had like a whole costume department on the second floor of his house, complete, like three rooms with seamstresses working all the time, 9 to 5. Wow. Working on outfits, just making outfits. Like I said, a basketball room, like where you could play basketball, but also choreograph dances with like 100 people. One more thing. A concert venue, a huge concert venue, including a VIP room where he would like bring people back at like 3 a.m. after shows, have parties there until like 5 a.m.
Wild.
There were like custom pianos everywhere. I mean, it was just crazy.
That's incredible.
A vault filled with like film and like tape reels and stuff, like an actual physical vault. In the basement.
Wow.
An elevator.
It's like, cool that is even open up to the public to see, or that that's an option. Very cool. Bring this discussion of art and time full circle. I would like to take this time to mention something I found out today. They are no longer, ever again, manufacturing F-mount lenses.
Whoa.
It's done.
Nikon has retired the F mount.
Yes. It's done. You can still buy some, like, you know, there's new stock floating around here and there. I'm really curious to see what happens to the secondhand market. Like, are they going to go up in value or down? I think a lot of lenses are going to go up. It makes me really want to buy the 58-1.4 autofocus F mount, the G, because that thing's so cool. But
wait a minute, is that an F mount?
Yeah.
Wait, so hold on. Wait, back up. I thought you meant the original F mount, like for like old film lenses.
No. The F mount.
Holy crap.
Yeah, the F mount, man. The 24-1.4G, the 58, all the lenses we shot, the F mount.
Mirrorless.
Yeah.
Only.
It's just going to be Z mount.
Mm-hmm. Z mount only.
And I think,
wow, that's crazy.
I know. And I think people don't appreciate or realize really how good the adapted F to Z mount adapter makes F mount lenses. Like, it improves the performance of, depending on what camera body it's attached to, but on the Z8, Z9, ZF, it improves the performance of that lens to be better than it ever was on any of the Nikon DSLRs, the D5, D6 included. And that's pretty wild. Still makes those, in my opinion, really relevant, valuable lenses to have, especially because of the trade-off in size and weight. Like, the 51-2 Z mount is a tank. The thing is, might as well be a 70-200. But that 58-1.4, that's like a featherweight.
The 58-1.4 is a feather, and still the my favorite lens of all time. I just wish there was a way to adapt it onto my Canon mount with a
There's no Canon adapter.
Autofocus.
Sadly, Canon's RF is pretty locked down as a technology. It's a bummer, but it's
time marches on.
I wonder what the last F mount lens they made was. Let's see if ChatGPT can answer that for me. Speaking of AI, what was the most recent
the robot
mount Nikon lens? Ask the robot. It's just searching Bing for me. It's funny how often it's like, okay, I could have just done that myself, but at least now I don't have to look at ads and like distracting pop-ups and crap.
Well,
most recent F mount appears to be the 24-70 2.8E EDVR lens. I haven't even seen that. Huh. I don't know what E means.
I don't even know what that is.
Is that the same denotation they had for the D800, where it was like an extra sharpness filter for astrophotography?
Oh,
I think that was an
yes.
E thing. So maybe it's a special
camera. Well, no, that was a sensor filter.
Right. But it was the same. I think it was an E like letter that signaled that that's what it was. And this lens apparently is a 2.8E. So maybe it's a special coding. All right. So it was a 70 to 200. Very cool.
Yeah.
I remember mine, and I believe it didn't even have VR built in. This has four stops. Anyway, sad days, but hopefully the aftermarket will stay vibrant and not appreciate too much an insane, cost or inflate too much in cost.
Look at this on Adorama, Nikon 24-70 f2.8 on closeout.
Yeah, I know. It's wild.
It's $1,000 off.
Here's the thing, though. All of those lenses I can't say all, but most of them were only engineered to resolve probably up to 25 megapixels, best case scenario. So, people keep buying 100 megapixel cameras and that becomes sort of the industry standard one day. It's like, it's kind of silly because who's really cropping in so much that it really matters and printing that large, but people will zoom in on a photo. And when it's at 100 megapixels, those older lenses just look soft, even though it doesn't matter unless you literally crop. And that is the viewing size experience. It doesn't matter. But when you zoom in, it people freak out that it's soft. Anyway, it doesn't matter, but sad days.
That's wild,
but it had to happen eventually. It's kind of crazy that Nikon even created a Z mount to begin with, because that, I think that was the big differentiating like edge that Nikon users really liked compared to Canon, is Canon has fundamentally changed their mount a few times to where it wasn't like previous lenses weren't supported, and the F mount has sustained through decades of innovation. But
it had to change because unless they wanted to like design their cameras to be bigger than they should have been.
Or could be, with the lens reflex.
The lenses physically, distance between them and the mirror needed to be, between them and the sensor needed to be different. So, and then I figured this would be the time to give yourself more options on lenses. So create a different mount and ideally a bigger mount that you could, could have some more versatility.
Totally agree.
I don't know. That's crazy though.
That's
really crazy. Especially thinking about like, how we both started in Nikon. Now you're back on the Nikon train.
Kinda. I love the ZF, but as a full wedding day, the flash experience is still not where I want it to be without a grip at the bottom. It's just, it does autofocus better than my R3, but I think I'm going to kind of float between them and, just mentally sort of flag what times of the day I know I will use the ZF and what times of the day I'm going to just be squarely in Canon land. We'll see.
Right.
But it's nice to have options.
Yeah, definitely.
When is your next wedding?
Oh, not for a while. I think March. Yeah. I don't have anything in February. I've got a bunch of other shoots that are popping up, a couple of commercial shoots and, some family sessions, some engagement sessions, but mainly just trying to work on my urine review, which I have decided I will actually do.
Good for you. Great.
As I told Sam that I wasn't going to, like, I'm not doing it this year. But I am. And then other blog posts too. Cause I've in going through all my images, all like, I think 240 or so, you know, keepers from last year.
You got to get that down to like 150.
Well, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, it's going to come down, but I don't know how much less I can do. Anyway, the point is all 250 photos that I have added to my yearly portfolio, my portfolio catalog, I should say. I need to go out of all of those. I realized how many of these weddings were like so incredibly awesome and bloggable that at least 10 of them absolutely deserve to be blogged. So I'm going to be working on a few of those as time allows.
All right.
What about you? When's your next wedding?
In a week.
Nice.
Yeah. And then I've got another big gap, but yeah, I'm going to the third. And then after that, it's, I don't know, maybe March, but
cool.
It's okay. It's cold. Well, we're over an hour, so welcome back.
Great.
Your child is now a student.
Yes.
A scholar.
She's in Montessori school, almost 3 years old.
All right. So she's on the scholarly path and will free up more of your time, I hope,
yes,
to continue these. We'll
see. I mean, literally the fact that, yeah, I have a little bit of time now to myself and I'm not going completely insane by feeling like I'm not even a human deserving of my own individual time. So
how much sleep do you get every night?
Sleep? Lately it's been 8 hours.
All right. Believe it. Nice. I went to bed at 9 o'clock last night.
9 o'clock last night? Yeah. When did you get up? Huh?
7 a.m. So I had 10 hours of sleep.
Oh, nice. All right. Let's see. That's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's good. All right. Well, we never really had a sign off on here, did we?
We never. Should we have a sign off now?
I don't know. Cheers, guys. Enjoy.
All right. Cheers, mate.
No.
Bugger off then.